Long gone are the days when businesses in China could get away with playing fast and loose with customers' data and personal information. The Chinese regulators have finalized a new detailed personal information national standard that lawyers recommend businesses comply fully with, despite its non-binding legal status. The specification provides granular detail of the Chinese government's efforts to increase oversight of the collection and storage of personal information. By no means an easy task in the world's most populous country, where internet enterprises have often adopted an approach of move first, seek forgiveness later. I'm Vincent Chow, a reporter at China Law and Practice, and host of the China Law Podcast, a weekly podcast exploring China's business and financial sectors from a legal perspective. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to this, so you don't miss any new episodes. With me today to discuss China's new personal information security specification is Sherry Gong and Mark Parsons, corporate partners at Hogan Lovells. Based in Beijing, Sherry has advised many multinational companies in China, including PayPal and Tencent, and is recognized as a leading lawyer in China's higher education sector. Mark, meanwhile, is based in Hong Kong, and he specializes in the TMT sectors across the Asia Pacific. In this episode, Sherry and Mark dissect the new personal information specification, what unbundled consent means, the impact on biometric data and targeted advertising, comparisons with the GDPR, and more. Sherry, Mark, welcome to the China Law Podcast.
Thank you, Vincent.
Thank you, Vincent. Good to speak with you.
Let me start with you, Sherry. It might be good to first define some key terms that we'll probably be using quite a lot today, which are data subject and data controller.
Okay, data subjects like you and me, if we are the individuals residing in China, we have the ownership to our data. So the individuals are the data subjects. For data controllers, they are the entity or organization who can control how to collect, how to use, and they're processing the data. So like the company or the entities, they control the processing method of their personal data.
Okay, great. So China has come out with this new major data privacy specification, and it's safe to say that it's been quite a few years in the making. Could you give a high-level summary of this specification and its background?
Okay. So this specification is very important in China. And since 2017, the first official draft comes out, it infected the practice very much. And we see the government take it as a benchmark for enforcements. And quite interesting, we saw the governments are trying to revise it and amend it. So we saw several drafts since the 2017 version. And now 2020 version comes out and will take effect on since October 1st. And it brings some significant changes. Actually, the specification is a long-pending national standard, but it provides comprehensive guidance on personal data protections and serves as an important reference for government enforcement actions. It's actually supplementing the implementation of the cybersecurity law. It's a best practice recommendation. And the specification covers the full life cycle of data processing. It's applicable to all data controllers, no matter if they are the network operators or just the general data controllers. Generally speaking, the specification covers the definition of the key terms like personal data or sensitive personal data, covers the basic principles for processing personal data. It also adjusts the data subjects' individual rights, such as access, correction, deletion, opt-out, account cancellation, complaints, etc. It also covers like how the data controllers to respond for data breach incidents and their reporting obligations. It also covers the security management and governance requirements, such as when a data controller needs a dedicated data protection officer.
And when we're talking about what personal data or information is, essentially it's any information that could identify an individual.
Yes, exactly. I think China's definition of personal data is generally in line with other jurisdictions. They took their data either alone or in conjunction with other information can use to identify a natural person.
Right, okay. So how does this specification compare with the EU GDPR, which is considered to be the gold standard globally when it comes to data protection?
Well, it's a good question. I think there's a few different aspects to the question to answer. I mean, one is just to sort of level set. So the GDPR, of course, is comprehensive principles-based data protection regulation in the European Union. It's a mandatory law, whereas specification is that it's not a binding law in itself. It is a set of recommended best practices. But I think, you know, in practice, we are seeing that, you know, the authorities in China are taking certain parts of the specification as being a, you know, an interpretation of general principles under a, you know, more generally worded mandatory law. And so that is key. So we do pay an awful lot of attention to the specification. In terms of its content, yes, I think it's fairly clear that it has you know, borrowed content from GDPR. It shares, you know, some common origin. But the other important feature that we come across in practice, though, is that China's regulation of data more generally, from a, you know, a cybersecurity perspective, where there is mandatory law in the form of the cybersecurity law and industry regulation and so on, you know, that's a much wider set of concerns than just personal data. And that is important, I think, to bear in mind when it actually comes to understanding how this regulation applies you know, in China in practice, because it is coming from a different perspective, I think, than the GDPR, which, you know, is fundamentally, it's really an elaboration of human rights, privacy as a human right. Whereas in China, we have a different set of policy factors that are weighing in. So I think there's two key differences then. One, the specification is not a binding mandatory law on itself. And two, when it comes to sort of interpreting and applying its principles, we have to bear in mind that it really has a separate policy origin from what you see in GDPR.
Hmm. So what is significantly new in this final version in comparison with previous drafts?
I think I can name a few. First of all, it expanded the forced unbounded consent from sensitive personal data to all personal data. So that means when data controllers collect the personal data for multiple business functions, one consent is not sufficient. They have to collect the separate consents if they offer extended functions. We can discuss further. And the second significant development is about the new requirements for personalized display and targeted advertising. The specification requires the data controller to display clearly when they display the personalized screen or not personalized screen, and the data subjects can easily to choose whether they need a general version or a personalized version. And the third, I think the big change is that they have a new provisions to regulate the collection, storing, sharing, transferring, and the public disclosure of biometric personal information. And also the specification cover the data controllers' obligations, enhanced obligations when they deal with their sub-party service provider, if either when they share the personal data with the third party, or there's a third party, we have the corporation, if they have their software in our website, then we have to deal with that situation.
Yes, that's something that is somewhat unique to China, where you have these super apps that act as platforms for third-party service providers. An example being WeChat, where you can do much more than just send messages. And this links back to your first point about unbundled consent, because the specification says a data controller like WeChat must ask for consent every time data is needed for each of these different functions. But this unbundled consent idea also makes the distinction between basic functions and their secondary functions. Like, for example, I'm sure we've all seen those requests from our apps asking for consent for our data to be shared in order to optimize our user experience, those kind of things.
Yes, correct. The 2020 specification distinguished the basic business function, like you can say a map navigation, ride hailing, instant messaging, social networking, online payments, online shopping, and transport ticketing. Those are kind of typical basic functions. When the data subjects provide consent to the data controllers, the APP platform, they can use their personal data for this purpose. And if the data subjects refused to give consent for the collection and the processing of this personal data, the operator can suspend the basic functions. However, for other functions the APP has, like profiling or retargeted advertising, or for upgrading service, enhancing the user's experience, or for the research and the development of new products, those kind of functions will not be deemed as extended purpose. So the APP operator cannot bundle those kind of functions into basic functions and just collect one consent under the new specification.
Okay, so let's bring in Mark here, who has insights across many jurisdictions in Asia. How do China's new standards for personalized displays and targeted advertising compare with best practice that you've seen elsewhere?
Well, it's a very good question. And as an observer with an international perspective to the developments in China, what we have here is actually a fairly prescriptive approach to regulating that sort of functionality. And to be clear to the audience then, well, what are we talking about? Well, these are, you know, if you type a search into a search engine, or you're searching for particular products on, say, an e-commerce platform, the results that you see are based not only on the input you've made in the text field, but it's based on insights and information that the platform has obtained about you in terms of your purchasing habits or your other behaviors, and using that information to influence the results that you see on screen. So what the specification recommends then is that be made clear to the users when that is happening, and provide users with an option to not have that functionality, that enhancement to the search applied to their search requests. And as I said, this to me it's a very interesting area to watch develop in the specification, because really in a way it goes to the heart of the commercial internet in terms of what platforms and other technology providers are seeking to deliver in terms of user experience, and more fundamentally from a business point of view, how they monetize their platforms and that user experience to drive advertising revenues and other forms of revenue that arise from the user experience. So it is fairly unique, I think it's fair to say, looking at it from an international perspective. You know, there is regulation of search going on in other jurisdictions. It's a mix of concern of user profiling and actually competition law issues as well. It's not just a data protection point, but in the specification, we really are zeroing in on the data protection aspect of taking a user's personal data and using that to influence the results that they see. And in this respect, I think actually the specification is fairly unique internationally. We don't, certainly in the wider Asia Pacific region at the moment, we don't see anything as targeted on this particular type of data use. And whereas, for example, the GDPR does regulate profiling, and there's quite a bit of interest in understanding how far that regulation will go. This aspect of the Chinese specification is actually very specifically focused on this aspect of personalization and personal display. So it certainly is a fairly unique development that we're watching quite closely.
What impact might these new standards have on the internet economy? One of the appeals of the Chinese market is the vast amounts of data that is readily available, and the traditional ease with which data can be shared and proliferated, which is of course great for internet enterprises trying to extract value from that data. As someone who works with TMT multinationals in China, do you think these stricter standards might undermine their business models?
Well, it's a very good question. It's a very fundamental question, because as I think I alluded to in my response in the previous question, it really goes to the commercial understanding of what the internet is. It's at its core, many of the services are free in terms of search and communications and content and so on. These are free services, but obviously the companies that enable that, those services are seeking revenue. They're looking to make money from it. So really, when I look at the specification, I really do see that sort of fundamental question is being played out. If platform operators do need to unbundle consent for every separate use that is made of data, that that's a fairly fundamental shift in the business expectations for companies that are providing these experiences online, because if there isn't a fee being charged, then there has to be some revenue being driven in some other way, and advertising and compensation for directing internet traffic to parts of the platform. That's really the commercial fundamentals of a lot of what we see in China and elsewhere. That's not unique to China. I think what is fairly unique to China is just the strength and the penetration of these platforms, the ecosystems that offer everything, rather than it being a browser based cyberspace or even a multiple app based interface. It's these ecosystems that that offer you everything. But I think the questions are still the same wherever you go in the world. The fundamental question is, how can data be monetized within the boundaries of the rules and within the boundaries of user expectations? And from my point of view, the specification really shifts that from even beyond what we see in Europe with GDPR. If it really is read literally and every separate purpose of processing needs to be unbundled and separately consented to, I can see how for platform operators and others active in cyberspace, they will see that as a potential challenge to their commercial model and how they do business.
Certainly, it's fascinating to think of China being a forerunner in some aspects of data privacy, which would have been unthinkable just a few years ago. Perhaps it has something to do with China being a forerunner in certain emerging technologies which have massive implications for privacy, and I'm thinking here about the increasing collection and use of biometric information. So, Sherry, why do you think the authorities have introduced these new standards for biometric data, specifically in the specification, which are more stringent than for the other forms of data?
I think because of the technology development, the biometric information are broadly used in our daily life. So more and more companies are using their biometric data, like their face recognition data, fingerprint. Interesting, when I went to my gym, they asked me to have a fingerprint. So sounds like it's very commonly used and collected in practice. However, because those kind of data is very special, you cannot, it must have a better protection. If they have been misused, the consequence could be very serious. So that's my understanding. The government has a strong intention or need to regulate those kind of processing of the biometric personal information. So the specification has their specific requirements. For example, when the data controller to collect the biometric personal data, they must give separately information and notification and must collect explicit consent. And for storage, they're saying you cannot store the biometric data from other identification data. And also, under the specification, the data controllers are required to deal with the raw biometric personal information very carefully, and they cannot be shared or transferred unless there's a business needs. And also, they must disclose more information about data recipients, which are not applicable in other situations when the data controller transfer or share general personal data. Our observation is that Chinese government tried to enhance the biometric data protection.
Have these sorts of data protection considerations affected your work much in terms of China's education industry? We've seen in recent months some scandals being reported about biometric data leaks in schools and universities around China. And also, of course, the pandemic has moved a lot of classes online.
Oh, yes. Because when we have the online courses and the data privacy issue is also a key issue, we must consider how to collect the consent from the students. And if the students is minors under the 14 years old, for example, Chinese have the specific privacy law for minors. So we need to have a separate privacy policy, and we must collect consent from their parents and their legal guardians. So that's special for in the education area.
Okay, so say I'm one of your multinational clients, and for the last few years, I've been revamping and improving my internal controls and data protection mechanisms in order to comply with the GDPR. And now I see China coming out with its tightened data protection standards. What sort of approach should I be taking to ensure compliance in China? Is it a matter of localizing the controls and mechanisms that I've developed on the back of the GDPR and localizing them for China? Or do I need a completely new approach? Maybe Mark, you could take a stab at this.
Well, I guess I'd say it depends. It's sort of the classic lawyer's answer. And the question fundamentally is, well, what is the organization seeking to achieve? Because, you know, because at one end of the spectrum, you could take GDPR. If you've implemented GDPR, well, then why not implement that as part of my organization in China as well? And we have actually seen that done. But bearing in mind, again, that much of what we see in the specification is non-binding best practice, there's likely to be a fair degree of overcompliance with local law if the approach is taken to implement GDPR locally in China. But that said, I think the specification and the mandatory laws in China that are now in place that do regulate data certainly mandate a higher standard than historically has been the case. And this is where we're stepping, I think, a bit beyond the specification to look at mandatory laws such as the cybersecurity law, the Consumer Rights Protection Act, the various bits of e-commerce regulation and telecoms regulation in China. All of these things are mandatory requirements, which by the time you add them up, you are looking at far more mandatory requirements around data accountability than we had a few years ago. And so actually the sort of data governance structure and accountability models that you see under GDPR are becoming more relevant, I think. So I would say in the main, I think where we come down is yes, we have had some clients who have at one end of the spectrum have taken the decision to implement GDPR in China. But I think those are probably still in the minority. And for most organizations, it's a matter of a balancing act of, well, what is practically achievable, what is expected by our customer base, our clients, employees, and developing something that is still a bit bespoke, not necessarily hitting all of the high notes of GDPR in every area, but, you know, ensuring that there is something that probably interoperates with that GDPR program, but doesn't replicate every aspect of it on the ground in China.
Multinationals aside, for a Chinese SME, let's say, which probably won't have that experience and interaction with the GDPR, so probably won't have, for example, a data protection officer appointed already, what practical steps could a Chinese SME take to ensure compliance with these new standards? Let me put that to Sherry.
Yes, I think for local companies, the data protection officer is a new thing, but more and more companies are considered set up this role because under the specification, they have some requirements for a dedicated role. Some clients are discussed with us whether they have the Hong Kong DPO, whether they can also assume China's role. We think if they can dedicate it to this role, we think that's fine. So that's one tip we want to give our client. And second is that they should pay more attention to the function of their data protection department. Usually it's a new department. So they have to deal with the relationship with the legal department, compliance department. So how to involve the data protection department, involve the decision-making process, I think that is a kind of challenging and that they have to deal with.
Well, Sherry and Mark, thank you both very much for joining me today.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to the China Law Podcast, a weekly discussion of China's business and financial sectors from a legal perspective. Make sure to check out our website, chinalawandpractice.com, to keep up to date with the latest Chinese legal and business news through our in-depth features and analyses, including contributions from our network of leading lawyers and in-house counsel, as well as full access to a searchable database of English full translations of PRC legislation going back 33 years. Trials are available, so do get in touch if you'd like one.
We'll be back next week with Lester Ross and Kenneth Zhou from WilmerHale to discuss China's arsenal for retaliation against US companies in the ongoing tech and trade war. Stay tuned, and thanks again for listening.